This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. John Bison is in his second term serving the city of Battle Creek and the surrounding area in the Michigan House. He is one of two Republicans on the ballot in the 19th state Senate district, which includes Calhoun, Barry, and Ionia counties. John Bison, thank you for being with us.
It is so good to be with you, Gordon. Thank you so much for the invitation to come join you today.
Please reintroduce yourself to our audience and tell us what you would like to do if you do get elected to the Michigan Senate.
Well, a lot of the people down in Calhoun County know me. They seem to like me as their doctor for the last 30 years. Prior to that, I was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, and recently I have joined the staff over at Western Michigan University, your home ground, as a adjunct professor in the brand new School of Medicine that you have out there. Although I have to admit that I haven't done much teaching because that occurred just about the same time that the people down here in Calhoun County have asked me to go to Lansing and represent the 62nd District in the House of Representatives. And for the last 30 years, I've been an otolaryngologist, an ear, nose, and throat doctor here in the Calhoun County area. We have raised four of our children out here, and we are blessed to have five of our six grandchildren living in the county that we live in. And so my dear wife has become babysitter-in-chief. She spends a lot of time with our grandkids these days.
So if you are elected to the Michigan Senate, what would you want to do if you got there?
I think that there is a lot of problems still facing this state. We have been addressing many of the jobs programs that we have had throughout the state, but I am sure that you have heard that we still have transportation problems. The area of my expertise is healthcare, and I feel like our healthcare system has truly failed us. That you can look at just about any part of our healthcare system, the insurance premiums, the coverage, the charges from provider and hospital services, the pharmaceutical costs, and all of them have been rising incredibly over the last few years. We have people out there who need to get insurance, but what we sell them is a program with a $5, $7, $10, or even $15,000 deductible on their insurance plan. And so they end up spending a great deal of money out of pocket. And for someone who is only making $30,000, $40,000 a year, you might find that plans like that are so expensive that they feel that they don't have health care. And to a large degree, they truly do not. But we need to work on that. Education has been a problem in the state, and we need to get education right so our kids get educated. And we have fallen behind in Michigan compared to the other states. We need to get our government to become fiscally responsible. We need to be supportive of our law enforcement colleagues and make sure that our economy remains strong.
Well, specifically on education, how do you get education right in the state of Michigan?
I think that we need to look to our education professionals, our teachers, because some of our teachers have been teaching for 25, 30 years, and they know what goes on in the classroom. They know how to educate. Oftentimes, we at the state level seem to micromanage our education process and leaving education to our educational professionals, I think, has is going to pay dividends in the long run.
Do you think the state needs to change the way that it authorizes charter schools?
I think that parents need to have the ability to send their kids to the best school that is available to them. And especially if you're in a school district that offers you limited choices, I think certain of my constituents may feel trapped. I think that charter schools offer an option, but if you ask, is it a panacea? I'm not sure that it is. You take a look at the performance of some of our charter schools, and it's not up to the level that we would ideally like it to be. And we may find that the competition is helpful. In other areas, competition seems to increase performance.
You mentioned healthcare in your opening there. What is the state role on healthcare, and how do you sort of align with, I suppose you would call it, the ever-changing dynamic at the federal level?
And I do believe that our healthcare is costing us way too much. We spend 18.5% of GDP, of the gross domestic product, on our healthcare spending, and this is twice as any other civilized country in the world. We need to get control of the cost, but we cannot forget the care. We need to make sure that we are providing the care to the people that need it. We need to make sure that whatever we do, we get to the point that we get to be a healthier state. And thus far, with all of our manipulations in the insurance market, we really have not gotten to be a healthier state of Michigan, except perhaps in the area of perinatal mortality, the death rate among infants shortly after birth, which has dropped dramatically over the last several years.
Well, is there a lesson there in what was done in that particular field, the perinatal health there, that could be applied more broadly to healthcare?
I think that perinatal mortality has very, very specific indicators, one of which is prenatal care. And we have expanded prenatal care, and we have ongoing teaching through our nurse family partnerships that we have out there. We have other resources going to brand new moms, and I think that that has driven down. And yes, I believe there are some lessons that we can learn. But we also have to find a way to finance the programs that work and find the programs that work, rather than just saying, yes, we can provide all things to all people.
The state has earmarked some money for roads, but this has been pointed out many times, the full effect of that doesn't really come yet for a couple of years. Is the money which has been set aside enough, and is it happening soon enough?
In my estimate, we need to develop better technologies in the treatment of our roads and the paving of our roads. Other states surrounding us are using a rubberized asphalt product, which I am told lasts a significantly longer period of time. And I think that we need to look around and see what technologies are working for surrounding states and make sure that we import best practices. Ever since I have started in the legislature, we have increased our spending on our roads by over $1 billion. And yet I can see no substantial improvement in the actual roads. And with that sort of spending, you would think that we would have had improved roads, but we don't. And so I think we need to have warranties on the roads and make sure that they get enforced. I would look to development of technology such as additives to the cement that we use in order to harden the cement so it isn't as soft as the specifications that we currently are using. You know, technology has really improved our lives in many different ways. Our watches, our computers, all have had just quantum leaps forward, and our roads we're doing like we have 7, 10, 20 years ago, and technology simply has not caught up with our road paving ability.
Well, might getting the most cutting-edge technology mean some higher cost in the short term? I mean, is that possible, and do you have to account for that?
You know, if you... I am looking at a rubberized asphalt product that is supposed to last twice as long, but it costs probably 7, 10, 15% more to initially apply. And if you can double the life of your road with a 10 or 15% cost increase, I would think that that would be something that we'd like to explore further.
But in the short term, you got to find the money from somewhere if you're going to do that, right?
And we do. It means that we have choices to be made. But even within the state of Michigan, we have 83 different counties that are each having road commissions, and some road commissions are better than others. And I think that we need to take a look at some of our best performing road commissions and see what it is that they do that allow them to balance their budgets and yet have roads that are reasonable to drive on.
Might there be other factors, though, there? I mean, I guess I'm just wondering if certain counties, it's a different dynamic in terms of, you know, maybe weather that they get, maybe in terms of other things they have to spend the money on?
I don't know that the weather, well, I guess you would be correct. Up in the Upper Peninsula, they have a longer winter. They have much more snow than we necessarily have to deal with down here on an annual basis. But some of the roads that are up there, especially the state roads, are very, very nice roads to drive on up there. If these roads that are in the Lower Peninsula, where we do get some freeze-thaw cycles that you don't, well, you do have up in the Upper Peninsula as well.
But there's differences of degree, so.
And there are differences of degree. And that, of course, you'd have to take into consideration.
So speaking of roads, what would you want to do to bring down the cost of auto insurance in Michigan?
My impression is that everyone who touches the auto no-fault system has, over the last 30 years, developed their own particular interest to the point where they can maximize their profits from the auto no-fault system. And I argue that we need a comprehensive approach to auto no-fault reform. In my mind, the only way that we can get great auto insurance rates as well as provide services to those who are injured is to get all the players around the table and get back to the original intent of auto no fault. You know, the original intent was that we would take care of the injured in a prompt manner and in an affordable manner. And we have found that everyone who touches the system. I had a little chip in my window and I pulled into a roadside station and they offered to fill it for me for $25. Eventually, they talked me into billing it to my insurance, and when I got the bill back from the insurance company, I found that it was billed not for the $25, but for $71. And the question in my mind is, does this go on with all automotive repairs? Do we pay too much? There are the billboards that say your MRI under auto no fault is going to cost you 2-3 times as much as if you had private insurance. And you have to ask, are we having others game the system as well? I believe a fraud authority is something that is necessary. And even on the benefits side, I would love to have a panel of providers tell us what is necessary for the recuperation and the rehabilitation of an individual patient, rather than having a series of lawyers for the injured, as well as a series of lawyers for the insurance companies that try to hash this out. One of the promises of auto no fault was that we were going to get the lawyers out of the system, and we have four times as many lawsuits over automobile claims now than we did when they instituted auto no fault years ago. And I see all of these as areas that need significant reform.
Do you think the state needs to end the practice of lifetime care for people who are involved in catastrophic crashes, or offer an option where people could buy insurance that does not include lifetime care if they are injured in a catastrophic accident?
I believe that the Senate was looking at something along those lines for our senior citizens. And the question becomes, can we as citizens afford an open checkbook with no end in sight? You know, if we were to do something like this, I personally would like to see a limit on benefits that would ensure that people would get to their maximal recovery. If someone is disabled from an accident, perhaps we need to look at disability in those cases. But in the rehabilitation, I would be interested in making sure that we rehabilitate our patients promptly because they get better outcomes that way, and that we get them the maximal rehabilitation possible.
So just so I understand your answer, you are saying that you think if someone is disabled, and I'm presuming then you're saying not able to work, that there would be something that would allow them to continue to get care?
I think that most everyone is able to get care, especially if they've been disabled. And the question in my mind is, does this necessarily have to be in the auto no-fault system, or should it be through the disability system that's already established and encountered? And I would be open to looking at the various options.
Okay. Does that mean that maybe somebody would not be getting that any longer out of the catastrophic claims, but maybe they're going on Medicaid, for instance, if they can't work anymore?
I could, if they are rehabilitated to the maximum point of rehabilitation, yes, I could see them going on to, and yet they have significant disabilities, I could see them entering the disability system.
There's a report from the Citizens Research Council last year saying that there might be some tough decisions ahead for state lawmakers because there's still some money promised for tax credits that could be cashed in. And now the state has set aside some money for roads in the future. You know, you're there in Lansing. You've had a look at all the budgets. You've had a look at, you know, reports from the fiscal agencies. Are you confident in Michigan being able to continue to fund essential services and not have to increase taxes?
I think we need to take a look at the services that are offered by the state and find out what our return on investment are. I think that we as government need to be fiscally responsible. And if we have programs that we are funding that have a very low return on investment, we ought to take a look at that and see if those programs ought to be cut and put to higher priority projects that have that help us more, that have a better return on that investment throughout all of government spending. Government needs to be fiscally responsible.
Are there particular programs right now that you think have a low return on investment for the state?
I think there are a lot of things that we do, and I'm uncertain. And that's one of the things that disappointed me coming from the world of medicine. You know, in the world of medicine, you typically have a great deal of data that you have to move forward with. You have data that has been proved in prospective double-blind studies that say that this treatment or medicine is effective to a standard of 19 out of 20 times. And I'm missing that sort of data and information when I go to Lansing and we're spending money on this program or that program. I oftentimes don't get the information that I ideally would love to have as far as what sort of results can we see from making the new spending for this program or that program. And it's something that I do think we need to go back and look at somewhat harder.
Do you think the state needs to make any changes to its laws on guns?
I think that we need to make sure that we keep guns away from people who are mentally unstable. I think that's what you're asking.
Background checks?
I think background checks are important.
What do you think about the idea of so-called red flag warnings somebody, you know, may say a family member seems to be, you know, a danger to themselves or others?
I would be hesitant to just have one person make a phone call and say, you got to take this person's or that person's gun away. We all have rights, and I think that following due process, if due process is followed and someone is found to be unstable, then yes, we need to make sure that that mentally unstable person does not have access to lethal weapons.
What lessons do you think that state policymakers, lawmakers, leaders, et cetera, should be taking from the Flint water crisis?
I think that a lot of the Flint water problem was with bureaucrats who very much knew what the rules were, but didn't know the understanding and meaning behind the rules. That I think that we need to look harder at making sure that the people who are running our health programs stay informed at all levels of government. You know, the federal government knew about the Flint water crisis, perhaps even before some other people throughout the state, and it seems like we had a failure of government at all levels.
Do you think the state should impose work requirements on people receiving Medicaid?
I think that able-bodied people ought to be contributing to society. We have a couple of bills that will be testing these waters, and this is specifically for the Healthy Michigan population, and I'm eager to see the results of our changes to the Healthy Michigan program. We may find it that it's very beneficial as a society.
Do you think that the right exceptions are in there? And which exceptions, you know, do you think are appropriate for somebody who is on Medicaid?
I think that Senator Shirky leaned over backwards trying to make sure that all people who have appropriate exceptions were included in the exceptions to the work requirements. My understanding is that he is looking only to get able-bodied people back into our workforce. And the initial estimate is that we may have some 300,000 workers returning to the workforce. And that would be a huge stimulus to Michigan's economy.
A couple of ballot proposals will be decided this November. One of them is recreational marijuana, legalizing it in Michigan. Do you think voters should approve that proposal?
I think it'll be a plague upon our children and our grandchildren. There is new medical research coming out saying that the use of marijuana, particularly in adolescence, can lead to schizophrenia and lead to other psychological differences. I had the opportunity to go to the state home for the psychiatrically involved adolescents, and I found that the vast majority of patients that were there had marijuana habituation as one of their co-diagnoses or other reasons that they are there. It seems like our psychiatric community has noticed that there is a correlation with mental disorder and the use of, and there are those who would argue that marijuana is indeed a gateway drug. We have legalized medical marijuana here within the state, and we appear to be unable to keep medical marijuana away from our youth. It seems like the youth's brains are much more subject to the effects of marijuana than the developed adult brain. And if we can't do it for medical marijuana, I fear that for recreational marijuana, this is going to be a very bad thing for our youth. If you take a peek at states that have legalized it, you get to see problems with test scores going down in counties that have legalized recreational marijuana in Colorado. And I think that there are lessons that we need to be aware of before we go down this road.
The redistricting proposal, voters, not politicians. Do you think people should approve that or no?
I was disappointed that it's largely just one group that has brought this forward. We take a look at our Supreme Court system, and our Supreme Court system is apparently that same sort of being nominated by parties but not being activists. And when I look at the Supreme Court, it seems like, you know, which party had nominated these nonpartisan judges. I would hesitate to have a system where there is still so much. And gerrymandering has never benefited me. It seems like it has only hurt in my prior races. And I can understand the need to move away, but I'm not sure this is a system to do it.
So as we get past the primary specifically, assuming that you're the nominee, I guess even if you're not the nominee, how much do you think Republicans should be aligning themselves with President Trump as they try to make their case to voters in the fall?
In Calhoun County, President Trump did very, very well. And he had obviously throughout the state in order to win the popular vote of, the state. I think he deserves a great deal of respect as our president. I know when I was a military officer, the first toast of the night would always go to the commander-in-chief. And it is by virtue of the fact that he holds the office that he does deserve the respect of the office, if nothing else.
But whether he deserves the respect of the office or not, voters may still look at his performance. They may not like certain things. My question for you is, you know, I mean, President Obama won Michigan by a lot, but Republicans did very well in Michigan in 2010 and 2014. You know, as you're going out there, I guess, do you have concerns about voters perhaps not liking tariffs? Maybe those don't benefit all the businesses in Calhoun County or Berry County, Ionia County, et cetera. I mean, what's the case you make to voters?
When I was talking to some of my voters, and particularly my farmers, and I specifically asked them that question about tariffs because I was concerned that the tariffs were hurting them. And the farmers came back and said that they were very, very supportive of having a level playing field to trade upon. And even though that they were being hurt by the tariffs that were put on them, they felt that in the long run, having that level playing field was ever so much more important that they were being very supportive of the president's approach and the president's efforts to equalize the tariff barriers between nations. And if we are going to be trading as free nations, I think that that it is important to all of us that we have that level playing field.
John Bison is one of two Republicans running for his party's nomination in the 19th State Senate District. That includes Calhoun, Berry, and Ionia counties. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Gordon.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.